Greetings and welcome to the Mount Rushmore podcast. I'm Jeff, and I'm joined as always by my good buddies Richard.
Hello.
And Michael.
Howdy. Got it right, Jeff.
I did the pointing and everything. Richard and Michael like to debate and deliberate the most ubiquitous aspects of a variety of topics, but let's say variety doesn't enter in into it. We always end up in wrestling somehow.
Right.
This week is no different. Richard chose the topic. What is it, sir?
It is the Mount Rushmore of celebrities cameoing. Cameoing in wrestling.
It's even cut off in the little description. Maybe I
even the description doesn't want to say that word.
Cameoing.
Yeah.
They're not camming in wrestling.
It's not the band Cameo.
It's not the band Cameo. Which I learned was they were like a jazz fusion act that just took advantage of MTV to become that they shaved their head into weird hair into weird colors.
Yeah, basically. Like,
Cameo's outfit is kind of like something out of like Legion of Doom, though. He could pull it off with a big cod piece.
That would be
his finisher, right? It would be just some sort of Yokozuna like squash or like crotch.
X-Pac, the Bronco Buster.
Thank you. Yeah, perfect.
So wait, why did you choose it, Richard?
Oh well, it is WrestleMania season, one of the four seasons of the year coming up.
The leaves turn and all of the cages fall from the trees.
Yes. And so I thought it'd be a good time for us to do a wrestling topic. And I've been watching a lot of wrestling reviews by a wrestling YouTuber, Wrestling with Regret, Brian Zane. And there have been quite a few celebrity cameos that have come up throughout his WrestleMania reviews. And so I thought that it would be a good thing for us to take a look at.
Okay, well, I'm excited about this. I think perhaps in recordings past, I don't know if we've ever been disrupted by WrestleMania. I know we've commented on it a lot, but since the home recording started, I don't think we've been disrupted by WrestleMania and the noise that it creates. But I know I used to live in a multifamily building that was very often impacted by that. So Richard chose the topic.
I like how you said that, like WrestleMania is some sort of natural disaster or something. You never know when it's going to happen. WrestleMania could hit at any time.
Yeah.
Are you prepared?
Yeah, like in some movies where there's a kaiju alert and everybody has to go underground.
Yeah, exactly. In this case, it's Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Okay, Richard chose it. Michael starts.
My first choice. Maybe it's the most obvious one, but it feels like the most... maybe the most sentimental one, maybe the most just like, of course this is happening, is Mr. T in both WrestleMania 1 and WrestleMania 2.
Also on my list, obviously. Okay.
Of course. This is like the number one pick that is a no-brainer. Mr. T, obviously, coming off of his involvement in Rocky 3, where he and Hulk Hogan, a.k.a. Thunderlips, both appeared and fought Sylvester Stallone's Rocky character, Hogan as in a celebrity fake kind of wrestling boxing match where Hogan picked up and kind of beat up Rocky, and the other one where Mr. T,
Clubber Lang.
Clubber Lang. Sorry, I was thinking of Creed for a second, but Clubber Lang just beat the shit out of Rocky for a good chunk of the movie, which is great. And of course, all of the thin veil of celebrity and wrestling fades away as Hogan and Mr. T team up to face up Mr. Wonderful, Bob Orndorff, and Rowdy Roddy Piper, as I recall, right?
That's correct.
In the first one. And Mr. T, you know, he is such a believable tough guy because he is a legitimate tough guy. He is like, you know, he was a former bouncer or bodyguard. And is just a specimen of a man. And though he doesn't quite have the stature of a Mr. Hulk Hogan, he certainly is formidable and like the most believable of people to have like participated as a celebrity in like a wrestling thing. In WrestleMania 2, it turned into, I think because of, they tried to start gearing these things towards the celebrity and what they can do or what they specialize at too. Look at that beautiful man smashing that Wonderful man. Or is that Hot Rod? That looks like Hot Rod.
Roddy.
In WrestleMania 2, it was like a boxing match between Hot Rod and Mr. T, which I believe Mr. T still came out on top, but he's the
DQ finish because
Piper
got frustrated and body slammed him.
Oh, well,
as he was wont to do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're gonna come into my world, you're gonna get body slammed. And you know, this was right on the edge of like the whole rock and wrestling thing. And Mr. T was, I felt, as much a part of that kind, even though he wasn't in rock music or MTV, Mr. T is just like this epitome of 1980s-ness and just a perfect celebrity wrestler.
Is there something? Why'd you pick it, Richard? Same
basic reasons. You know, it was WrestleMania, was the first WrestleMania, was Vince McMahon's big gamble to try and take his regional wrestling organization national and there, and also, I guess, by extension, worldwide. Mm-hmm. And there was a weird list of celebrities that he had on there, including Liberace as a guest timekeeper. And several other kind of B and C list celebrities. But Mr. T was back in 1985, I guess, was about as big as you could get in terms of a mainstream celebrity. And to get him in the ring working with these other wrestlers. Now it turns out that he got some heat backstage. Some people thought there was unfair that he was getting this top spot in this big wrestling show.
Oh,
he wasn't a wrestler. I know Roddy Piper was someone who was very hesitant to work with him, even though they wound up working together two straight WrestleManias. And I also chose him for the Richard Belzer incident. Are you familiar with this, Jeff?
No, this is awesome.
Oh yeah, so Richard Belzer had the comedian and longtime at Law and Order SVU actor had a talk show in the 80s in New York, and Hulk Hogan and Mr. T came on the show to promote WrestleMania, and Belzer kind of started making fun of them or whether wrestling was real or not. So Hogan decided to prove that it was real by putting him in a sleeper hold.
Oh geez,
and he not only got Belzer asleep within about 15 seconds of putting the move on, he then dropped him, and Belzer like smacks his back of his head on the floor, gets a giant cut, pops back up awake, his blood pouring down the back of his head.
Oh God.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. It's macabrely funny.
Wow.
Just to see the reaction of everybody. And Mr. T is like kind of sitting there going, who was not involved with the hold or anything like that. You could see the gears in his head turning of, am I getting sued? Is this the end of my career? What is happening here?
The strange thing is Piper went on to do the same thing to every member of Law and Order SVU and every member he just went through the list. I mean, other than Richard Belzer, he got like, Yaphet Kotto from Homicide in like a figure four. And then he,
all the shows were his
Andre Brower. He got him into, Months
shows up. That's where he goes and gets those people. Yeah.
For sure.
You know, 4 months. This is funny. That might be, based on just reading, the biography Remain in Light, Chris France and Tina Weymouth book.
I can't wait to see how you're going to tie this into wrestling.
I'd love this.
This may be that definitely sounds like his worst gig. But they talk about Belzer opening for the Ramones at some club in New York and saying he was spat on, pelted, like within 5 minutes. Oh. Belzer had been pelted by bottles and rocks and things like that. So,
nice.
So, oh my God. Well, let me ask you this. At this time, how many people do you think understood,
this is a great question coming.
How many people even understood what this phenomenon of wrestling was? But they were being told by their agents that they had to somehow be involved. If like a Liberace shows up, like, do you think anybody even understood, or they think they just had to be part of it?
Of all people, I don't think Liberace understood when anything was camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's funny. I thought you were going to go the other way, whether the people believe that like Mr. T wrestling was real or not. But I love that the question is geared towards the celebrities and what they knew they were getting into. I think most of these celebrities just see outside as TV is something to do and some paycheck and Liberace. I mean, you speak of Liberace, but man, I mean, you're just out there to perform. What's the difference whether he's playing God Bless America in a ring or on a, you know, opening up for whoever.
Or headlining. Or in Las Vegas, yeah.
Or in Las Vegas, yeah.
I'd seen the incident where Mr. T was being interviewed on David Letterman, and he was squeezing a tennis ball or something to try to channel his rage away from and not beat him up because of his funny jokes. Okay, well, that's a great choice for both of you. So, Richard, what would be your second choice?
There were two that I thought were pretty obvious from the 1980s, and Michael chose the first one, Mr. T, which was one of mine. The second one that I thought was pretty obvious was Cyndi Lauper.
Mm. Oh, cool.
The rock and wrestling connection, kind of what sort of kick-started wrestling's fascination with being seen as being hip by its association with certain celebrities. So Cyndi Lauper got involved with wrestling because Captain Lou Albano, the famous rubber banded manager, played her dad in the Girls Just Want to Have Fun music video. And her boyfriend slash manager, David Wolf at the time, was a big time wrestling fan. And that's how Captain Lou sort of wound up getting cast in the music video. And because of their friendship that they struck up, they were able to work a deal where Cyndi Lauper would show up on a WWF wrestling program and be interviewed by, surprise once again, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Hmm. And being Piper, the segment goes chaotic, and he just went up insulting her and running her down. Captain Lou Albano does a heel turn on her and basically says that he was responsible for her music career, including writing the lyrics to Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which as we covered in our cover songs episode several years ago, was not even written by Cyndi Lauper. It was actually a cover of some guy singer's song. Yeah. So this makes it even better. And so Cyndi Lauper winds up getting involved with a female wrestler, Wendy Richter, and winds up basically becoming her manager and is heavily involved in these storylines. They have a MTV wrestling special, The Brawl for It All, or The Brawl to Settle It All, I think is what it was called. Anyway, it was a wrestling WWF card that was shown on MTV, with the headliner being Wendy Richter versus Leilani Kai for the Women's Championship. And this whole thing goes all the way to the first WrestleMania, where Lauper is once again managing Wendy Richter wins the World Championship. So, and Cyndi Lauper was involved with the wrestling album, all the different wrestlers singing and doing their god-awful music tracks. She was involved with that. She had wrestlers in her Goonies music video. So she really stayed involved with wrestling for the long haul. And to me, it's just fascinating because do you think someone in WWF might have pitched Madonna as the star they should have gone after? And Vince McMahon's like, no, I'm hitching my wagon to that Cyndi Lauper. She's got spunk.
Hard to say. I think this is a great choice, but I think Cyndi Lauper is a lot more self-aware or just goes with the flow than Madonna, who I think would take herself way too seriously. It was funny I think about those two a ton, in especially in terms of like, I always see them paired, right? Like Madonna and Cyndi Lauper were always kind of paired together because they were these kind of alternative girls, and that sometimes they both had like kind of dyed hair, or Cyndi was pink and blue and shaved, and Madonna was just like this bright white, you know, platinum blonde thing. And then, but she'd also have kind of like the, you know, kind of a punk look when she was in Desperately Seeking Susan and things like that. So they definitely both had like this, they're making music, but they're also in these, they're also doing other things or making movies and Cyndi Lauper's. Yeah. But I think that Madonna could not have put it off because I think she thinks too much of herself. And Cyndi Lauper is just like, man, she was just a very fun, silly person that like would, she's not going to hurt her image by any of this. It's only going to like increase her reach, outreach to kind of like wrestling weirdos. I don't know. Right. I think that she, I don't know her mindset or anything, but from all appearances, I think she would have fit in so much better and did.
I think famed opera singer Maria Callas might have done well also. Mm.
She definitely could have thrown her weight around. Yes, for sure.
Michael, what is your second choice?
My second choice, just going down the line, I just went kind of in order of when these things kind of happened. 1995's WrestleMania 11 featured Lawrence Taylor, former NFL linebacker, just turned former NFL linebacker, versus Bam Bam Bigelow, who still has one of the best names in wrestling. in like the main event of the, like the final event of the evening, in that WrestleMania, where, you know, Taylor is a big dude and a strong dude and is often considered the best football player of all time, maybe, or at least like in the top three to have ever played the game, just kind of all out. Look at that huge man smashing that other huge man. You gotta love, sorry, just looking at a picture if you're on YouTube, just Bam Bam Bigelow's outfits were just incredible.
Oh, sure.
Just the flame, and then the flame tattoos on his head.
Yeah, yeah,
and
tattooed head.
This huge bruiser. And I guess the, you know, some feud started backstage in a few months before in like another wrestling event where Lawrence Taylor, you know, was got into an argument with Bam Bam at the Royal Rumble. And then they went on to have like, for all intents and purposes, a pretty legit wrestling match. And I think there's a lot of people that think they can go into the ring and wrestle, you know? And I think there are people that are just physical athletes that can actually do it, that you're always kind of, that if you looked at Lawrence Taylor, you're not going to be surprised that like, oh, apparently he's just coming out of the NFL, just yoked and athletic and can do all these things. And it's certainly believable. And I think that's where there's often this, certainly when we get into a couple later picks of mine, celebrity can be a gimmick, but then it can also be an asset. And here you have an actual athlete fighting a wrestler, and it looks real and feels real. And it gives that, it kind of, the celebrity nature of it plus the athletic nature of it just lends to the credibility of the performance in the ring.
Yeah, this is one of the reviews that I watched on Wrestling with Regret. And whenever you have a celebrity actually wrestling, so much of the success of that match comes down to the person they're wrestling against. Hmm. Whether or not they're somebody who can basically carry that person to a quality match. Are they a good
point?
The phrase would be a good hand in the ring. And Bam Bam Bigelow does a great job of, he makes Lawrence Taylor look like $1 million in this match. And that's not always the case with these celebrity wrestling matches. Now, again, you mentioned it. I mean, obviously Lawrence Taylor was a physical freak and had just retired from the NFL and was in pretty close to peak physical condition. But he seemed to get all of the little aspects of wrestling. He could cut a promo pretty well. He did everything that you would you would want a wrestler to do.
That's why he was great. Okay.
Yes.
It's funny seeing them size up. You see Bam Bam by himself with like his security team or his entourage, and he looks like the biggest guy in the world. And then standing next to Lawrence Taylor, he just seems like a person, right? Like a regular person.
Yeah.
Okay. So cool. So we are now at our halftime and going to ask and beg maybe to see if somebody wants to suggest a topic for our show. And then Cam will maybe even come on the show and discuss that topic with us. If you're a podcaster within earshot of this promo, please, let's talk. Let's have a fun cross promo episode like Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam
promoting. Right. Yeah. LT, if you're out there, come on. Yeah. We'll talk about whatever you want. We can talk wrestling. We can talk about
breaking Joe Theismann's leg if you want to talk about that.
Sure.
Okay, Michael, what's your third one?
My third choice was from 1998, and it was the WCW Road Wild.
I know what this is.
Wrestling already. Match. Of course you do, because it's terrible. It is when Jay Leno teamed up with Diamond Dallas Page, with Kevin Eubanks on the side, to face off against Hollywood Hulk Hogan. I guess I picked Hogan twice. And WCW chairman, owner, whatever, Eric Bischoff, in like a, tag team match. And it's as terrible as you can imagine. Jay Leno comes out and he's like, this is 98. So Jay Leno is in his, kind of prime. There he is. That's the extent of the match too, of his wrestling prowess. Jake is out there in like a Tonight Show t-shirt and like sweats. And I love the wristbands, as if like his wrists are taped up. But he's out there and he gets tagged in and he puts Hogan into like an arm bar and this kind of rings him around a couple times. And Hogan feigns pain. And then he and DDP like double clothesline Hogan. And then the real thing is him fighting with Eric Bischoff for, parentheses, reasons. But it's just one of those, WCW was so weird. It was so weird, right, Richard? Like, it got to a point where, like, it was the new thing-ish, and then it became, like, instantly terrible.
Yeah.
And I think little things like this, like, I mean, gosh, the celebrity of Jay Leno, if that can't carry you to a great match, I do not. I don't know what. But he gets into it, he gets into this fight and he gives Eric Bischoff a low blow with like a big, forearm, to the groinal region. And it's just like, okay, do we need to have this? Why are we trying to sell this? Who is this? Is this selling any? What is the point of this?
But that's what I would ask. Who is this helping? Like, do little kids want to see Jay Leno out there? Or...
I don't know. But
Eddie, I want to see the funny man from Late Night punch Hulk Hogan.
Conan O'Brien stands. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But go ahead, Richard.
WCW was obsessed with celebrities in like the late 90s and early 2000s, like right before they ceased being an organization. And I don't think that helped their slide, because this is after the NWO had been the big hot commodity, and then Stone Cold and The Rock come along and they kind of knock WCW off their perch, and WCW is desperate to try and figure out what can we do to kind of get some of that heat back that we had when the NWO was first started. So that kind of leads really well into my next pick, which is when David Arquette won the world championship for WCW. I mean, we're talking about a lot of these people who came in and they did maybe one match or a couple of matches in Mr. T's case, or in Cyndi Lauper's case was just more of a manager and kind of did stuff on camera, but not really getting physical. Now, David Arquette actually won the WCW world championship and defended it at a pay-per-view. So the backstory is, we all remember his magnum opus, Ready to Rumble, of course, the wrestling movie that he starred in. Yes, there we go. And it was a Time Warner film. So they decided to promote it on the Time Warner owned WCW television presentations. And someone got the idea is, hey, as long as we've got this, a big time Hollywood celebrity like David Arquette involved, we might as well do something really shocking with him and give him the world championship. And apparently Arquette was like, who was a big wrestling fan, thought this was going to be a really bad idea and didn't want to go along with it. But the executive said, if you want to promote your movie, you're going to have to go along with it. So they have there's a four-way match with Diamond Dallas Page and Eric Bischoff again. And I can't remember who the fourth person is, but at some point people get knocked down. Arquette's on the ground. Bischoff's on the ground. Arquette kind of crawls over to Bischoff and drapes his arm over Bischoff. Referee counts to three. And of course, Tony Schiavone, the announcer, with the very infamous call of, did David Arquette just win the world title? Yes. Yes, he did. And it was, for a lot of wrestling fans, one of the most kind of disgraceful moments in WCW history. It's one thing to have a celebrity come in and work a match. Like, there's ways you can, like with Jay Leno, you can set up the match so they don't do very much. Kind of come in, get a couple of moves in. That's great. And then get back out and let the real wrestlers work. What you can't do is you can't have David Arquette winning the world championship, man. It just devalues your company. It devalues the world title. Even though we all know wrestling is fake, there has to be some veneer of reality associated with it. And when Deputy Doofy from the Scream movies or whatever he was called, is your world champion, it's just a bad look.
Yeah. When Roseanne Arquette was made Surgeon General, that was a mistake also. What do you think the mentality is? It's like, we know this is a theatrical thing, but among the fans, like, we know this is, I don't know. We're already giving you all, we're already suspending our disbelief to.
Right. Yeah. I think it was seen as disrespectful to the other wrestlers who kind of literally put their bodies on the line week after week to do this, to have someone, a big time Hollywood celebrity, just kind of stroll in and suddenly get the world title. I think that was, for wrestling fans, was the number one issue.
Okay. Well, I think I accidentally put you guys in the wrong order this last time, but is this even true in terms of like what your choices were up on the screen?
No, this you're missing Michael second.
It's okay. It looks chaotic up there. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to just say
Lawrence Taylor. Mm-hmm. You're missing.
Sorry. I hit save. Jade
Lynn, there you go.
Now we're good.
Lauper.
Who just
you know, Michael, you're not, your last one?
One last thing before I go into my last one. WCW also, you know, I think that there was also like this thing that was happening in like the late 90s into the early 2000s, where like the Attitude Era of wrestling with WWF and like a thumbing your nose at authority sort of thing and breaking kayfabe sort of aspect to all this stuff was happening. You know, it was only a couple years before that like there was like the finger poke of doom sort of thing with Hulk Hogan, where they just dropped the belt to him again, with like, without a real wrestling match. And a lot of people just kind of like, this company doesn't give a shit. Like they're being like cheeky and they're being like smart assy and they're being really just, you know, they talk about, you know, this weird industry talks a lot about like doing the honors and respect and all these different, like kind of machismo sort of like, pumping themselves up sort of feelings of like, this business is sacred. And then there is one company that like kind of just didn't give a shit. And here's David Arquette winning the title. And I think that was happening a lot. It kind of would go back and forth between the two companies, the two main companies in wrestling. But I think that kind of sort of like peevish, you know, kind of I don't know, teenage attitude, I think it starts to wear thin at some point.
Yeah. All right. What's your last choice, Michael?
My last choice. And it is Floyd Mayweather Jr., famous boxer, fighting in a no-holds-barred match against the giant. I guess he wasn't the giant then. He was the Big Show, Paul White, in a WWF match. And this is one of those kind of like David versus Goliath type things where Floyd Mayweather is not like a huge guy. He's maybe what, 5'6", 5'7"? Let's see, 5'8", weighs maybe, you know, probably boxes somewhere around like what, 150? I don't know, maybe even lighter than that against the Big Show, who's, you know, all kind of build right around that size of like 7'1", 7'2", 500 pounds. And at the time, Paul White, or the Big Show, he had like this finishing move where he was like, he just punched you. He like, he was just like,
like a big word. When his big ham hocks would come slowly flailing at you.
Yeah, he just kind of gave you like one big punch. And it was like, okay, that's going to do it. And then leading up to this match, they kind of introduced Mayweather as someone who's kind of in the audience watching a fight between the Big Show and an even smaller wrestler, Rey Mysterio Jr., who's like 5'2". I mean, there's a good size difference, but like Rey Mysterio is like, you know, this little kind of Lucha Libre type wrestler who was just tiny compared to the Big Show. And they'd have like pretty good matches because of the two different sizes and styles and everything. But Mayweather like jumped over the barrier and like threatened Big Show or punched him or got in his face. And they challenged him to a no disqualification match, which is all great until like, and like Mayweather is like the baby face of all this. He was kind of like the good guy because the Big Show is this big giant man beating up this little guy. And then like he slipped on like brass knuckles, like underneath his like kind of little lightweight boxing sparring gloves. And that's
Mayweather did?
Yeah. And that's how he won. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, you were David, now you're Goliath. Or now you're
just like David, but you're like tying the giant shoelaces together, or like when you're using a weapon to try to show that you can beat this bigger guy or tougher guy, like boy, what a balloon deflating sort of end to that. Like it's fun when like a villain uses like a chair, even when a good guy uses a chair, takes it away from the villain and turns it against him and uses his own, you know, he's hoist on his own, you know, not batard, but like a, you know, his own folding chair. But I don't know. I think for him to win that way seemed very much a very strange choice. Maybe the Big Show wouldn't let him go over that way. Like, of course, this 150-pound guy can't beat this other guy. But it's like, well, but if he's a legit boxer, he should be able to have strength and knock him down. But I think it's an interesting thing when they have, okay, these two opposing things that could have been pretty good, and then it leads to kind of a farty ending.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they have different writers? Do you think the story is being controlled by somebody different in that moment? In those instances, like the persons who would be the caretakers of the story normally aren't on the job or aren't in control anymore.
I think that they, I don't know for sure, but it always seems like everything is set in stone until it isn't. Mm. And then somebody just decides at the last minute to make a change, and that's just what it is. And it's probably usually Vince McMahon or whoever behind the scenes where things are going one way and they're like, well, you know, I've decided, I've got a feel for this business, and so it's going to swerve a different way. And, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, what is your last choice?
My last choice is Pete Rose.
Oh, wow.
I knew it. I absolutely knew it. I knew it. This is such a Richard choice. I love it.
So Pete Rose is not in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but he is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Why? Because for three consecutive WrestleManias, he got beat up by Kane, the big red machine. Started off at the first, his first appearance, he was, it was in Boston, and Pete Rose was the special guest announcer. And they decided to have Pete Rose go full heel mode and cut a promo just shitting all over Boston, Boston sports teams, Boston sports fans. And it's Pete Rose, so he's great at it. And then Kane comes down for his match and goes right into the ring, goes straight for Pete Rose and gives him a tombstone pile driver. So the next year at WrestleMania, before Kane's match, you see the San Diego Chicken come out and starts trying to mess around with Kane. And of course, Kane being this like big stoic, wears this mask and is, you know, had been burned as a child and is this big monster type, wants nothing to do with the San Diego Chicken. Then the Chicken attacks him, and it turns out it's Pete Rose in the San Diego Chicken costume. Kane, obviously, the attack does nothing for him, rips off the chicken head. It's Pete Rose, tombstone pile driver. Third year, they get the real San Diego Chicken to come out to distract Kane. While
fool me once,
yeah. Well, Pete Rose comes behind and tries to attack him with a baseball bat. Once again, doesn't work. Tombstone pile driver. There were years and years of just this running gag of Pete Rose getting tombstoned by Kane. It's,
you know, that's good. That's damn thing, Richard, ever. Jeff, you're asking about it. That's good writing. That's consistent, and I like that they do. I like that it happened three times. They followed the rules.
Yeah.
Time. They were to try it a fourth time, but this time.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love that Pete Rose, who I don't know how much self awareness he really has, at least had enough self awareness in the wrestling world to know that it was going to work much better for him to be the bad guy.
That is freaking brilliant.
Yeah. Why do you have Floyd the Barber up on the?
Oh, you said Floyd.
Oh, it was because of Floyd Merriweather.
A little visual thing that wasn't as funny as I expected. Okay, guys, this was very funny. Very hilarious.
Andy Kaufman. That's surprising.
Oh, that's right.
You know, it's funny. I kind of let that up for you, but I figured he did enough of his own kind of real wrestling in his own way that felt
It didn't feel like I didn't include him because it went beyond a cameo at that point.
Yeah, I think that's the truth to it, is he did enough of it that it was like, oh, that was just what he did. Right. It's funny, while we were sitting here, I went and I looked up that David Arquette choice of yours, and like the second line of his Wikipedia entry, aside from being an actor, is like, and professional wrestler, and it's like, boy, that is a fucking stretch.
Wow. Yeah, that is hilarious. What a fun topic. Thank you, gentlemen, for being so hilarious and bringing it. I, as always, this is another topic where your scholarship way outmatches mine, but here we go. Mount Rushmore of celebrities cameoing wrestling: Mr. T, Lawrence Taylor, Cindy Lauper, Pete Rose coming in.
That's a heck of a fatal four-way, Rich.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I think I would favor Lawrence Taylor, but
I'd say LT goes over at the very, no, Mr. T wins. I would say the order of elimination goes like this. Cindy Lauper is chased out of the ring by Pete Rose. Lawrence Taylor defends her. Maybe Mr. T defends her honor and eliminates Pete Rose, and then LT turns heel and gets rid of Mr. T.
There we go.
All right.
We did it.
Well, this has been the Mount Rushmore of celebrities cameoing in wrestling. I'm always Jeff.
I'm Richard, brother.
I'm Michael.
Yeah.